Blog Talk Radio. Your host, Merle Exit. We got a pretty nice day here in New York City. It's 6 p.m. on my time. And, well, I'm still here. I'll be traveling soon, but we got a show. We got a little bit of Broadway with singer Natalie Toro, who has done such shows for, like Les Mis and A Tale of Two Cities. And then we got a writer, Bob Nesoff, who wrote a book called Spider Hole. It's a newly released novel, and he will be on to tell us all about it. No, I haven't read it, but he'll do fine telling us about the book. And right now, of course, we have to have our wonderful commercial. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. Yes, I could use one right now, but it's not that easy. You have to go on www.brownies.com to get it. They're out in Phoenix, Arizona, and around that area. So somehow I got to convince them to send them over here, maybe. So, well, let's begin with let's open it up here, and we have Natalie on the other end. Hi, Natalie. How you doing?
Hi. I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, just great. Where are you in the Are you in New York City?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Just wanted to know.
Yeah. Well, you
never
know
where anybody's coming from with the internet, you know.
Of course.
This past weekend was the second weekend of the show. Berg.
Yes, the Neil Berg Broadway Showstoppers at Queens Theater in the Park.
How was it?
It was great. I think that what I loved doing about that show is that, you know, I get to sing all my big Broadway hits, and it just brings me back. You know, it just brings me back to all these great moments, and you know, you don't realize that when you sing stuff like that, you don't realize that the audience really does get affected, because they're actually seeing someone who's played the role, not just someone singing it.
Yeah, that's what I like about his shows. It's like you're getting kind of like the show without the plot.
Yeah.
Well, part of it, a little bit of the show without the plot, you know.
Right,
and,
right. A concept version.
Yeah, but it's enough to, when you have a whole group of these Broadway stars, that you're kind of getting like sort of the best of the best. In the way,
no,
you
really are. You really are. And, you know, a lot of us are in between things. Once in a while, we're in between things. And so it's nice to go and do something like this for the audience that, you know, like Neil's show, I think, is like the only Broadway review that's out there now.
I was going to ask if you do things, if there's others that you go to like that. Is that easy and is that unique?
I think that, you know, I do a lot of concerts and with other people and things like that, but I think Neil's thing is the Broadway thing. You know, I mean, he really does specialize in bringing the actual Broadway person on that stage, and he puts the shows together. I think that he's been really successful in doing that. Now he's all over the country.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to Canada this summer. So that's really, really interesting. I mean,
would you know, for instance, like, are you going to be, like, traveling with his show, or are you just like, oh, I have some time, and let me, you know, so I'll do the show right now?
Not really. I mean, once in a while, you know, he'll call people in, and he likes to mix it up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice that I had the whole Queens, the 2 weeks, the full 2 weeks there. And I have a couple of... we do some charities for Covenant House. So
mm-hmm.
we have a couple of those coming up, one in Philly and Newark and D.C. So, you know, I get to do those. And then you just pick up so many different things, and I'm in the middle of doing my own show and trying to get that up. So it's nice to have a little downtime to be able to do that.
Sure. Where's that show going to be?
Well, we don't know yet, because I just literally got off the road 3 weeks ago, meaning I was on tour with In the Heights, and I wrote a show, and a one-woman show, and I debuted it in L.A. at the Magic Castle, the famous Magic Castle. Do you know where that is?
I've heard of it, yeah. When you said it, I went, that's a place that people... Yeah, do big stuff there.
Well, it's the epicenter of, you would never know it, but it's the epicenter for all the magicians in the world. And
yeah.
It's kind of like their little country club, you know. They go in and try out their magic, and it's right in the center of Hollywood. And they started a cabaret series actually with me the year before, and it was very successful. And then I wrote this great show. And I decided, you know, it would be really nice to debut it there. Well, I was on the road, so I had to do it on my night off. And it was very, 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 very successful and got great reviews. And so that's the show I'm going to be working on and trying to open it here in New York.
Oh, great. That's good. Well,
yeah.
before we continue, so my audience, I want my audience to hear one of the songs. And I have up here, I Dreamed a Dream.
Great.
Which that's from Les Mis, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let's play that one and then we'll get back to you.
Okay, great.
Gone when all
Wow. How long will you did you have that role?
Actually, that's the Fantine role. I did the Eponine role.
Oh, I'm so
yeah.
Well, I'm trying to figure out. Okay. Well,
yeah, I played Eponine, and actually, I was the first American Eponine to do it on Broadway a long time ago. And I held on to that role for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did I actually have on your song list? There was one of them that you sang as Eponine.
No. The Les Mis, that's the only one I did from Les Mis on the
album. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I played one that.
And actually, that's fine. And the arrangement actually is that's what I love about the album is that I have like 9 different arrangers on the album, and it's very eclectic. I don't know if you got to hear the whole thing, but some of the songs and the arrangements are very different from what people are used to hearing them.
Oh, okay. What I did is I grabbed some that, ripped them out onto the load and said, this one, and this one. Now, by the way, you've worked with Wildhorn, huh?
Yes, I did on a couple of things, and mostly readings. We did a reading of his one of his new shows that actually is being done in Europe right now, and of course I can't even remember the name of it now. And then I was part of his other new show that's trying to get off called Havana.
I remember reading something about that. Yeah.
But, I pretty much met him while I was doing Tale of Two Cities on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I met him. So, he's a hoot.
Yeah, I actually met him at a conference at MoMA because he was presenting his new song, his New York song.
Oh, interesting.
Did you know that he wrote a song?
No.
He wrote a song that was supposed to replace New York, New York.
You're kidding.
No.
Wow, that's interesting.
So he wrote this song, and I said, oh, it's really nice. I like it. It sounds good. It's just like no one wanted it because it wasn't Frank Sinatra, I guess.
It wasn't.
I mean,
yeah.
It fit in. It, the words and everything, music was good. I'm like,
You just can't change a legendary song. You just can't.
Yeah,
it's that. I mean, the whole world knows that song.
And there was a gentleman that was on the stage the second time, who was sang in the show Civil War.
Oh,
the second weekend. I can't think of his name.
Civil War. You mean Ron Bomer?
No. Who was on the first weekend?
It was Ron Bomer and Chuck Wagner.
Okay, who was on the second weekend?
Chuck Wagner, Lawrence Clayton.
That's it, Lawrence Clayton.
Lawrence Clayton, okay.
And it said that he was in the show The Civil War, which is also a Wildhorn.
A Wildhorn, yeah. And Chuck got to do, Jekyll and Hyde with him as well.
Oh, cool. I was just wondering if a song from Civil War got out there. I thought did he do one?
I don't think so. I think they just mentioned that he was in it.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
There was another one. There was another one Wildhorn did. And after I reviewed it, then I looked on the, I looked to see, other reviews.
Yeah.
And I went, were these people at the same show that I was at?
Really?
Yeah, because I loved the play. I thought the music was great. And I'm going, where were these people?
Where was everybody else? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but anyway. So now the show you did, what do you call it? It's funny. I was about to say, I was in, I just have to relate to them. I was in the movie Up the Down Staircase many years ago.
Uh-huh.
And in the book, when they mentioned A Tale of Two Cities, they referred to it as A Sale of Two Titties.
Oh, my goodness.
And what happened is that every time I come across, when I come across the name of that show, I'm about to say that, and then I have to and say, no, it's a
Can you
tale
say that on
of
the
two
air?
Cities.
Huh? Can you say that on the air?
you can say, I have jokes that I can say anything on the air, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's not a problem. I've said worse. But anyway, I understand. When I looked at it, I remembered that who the PR person was from there, Judy Jacksina.
Judy Jacksina, yes.
Yeah, and I don't remember why I didn't get to see the show, but I didn't get to see the show. It probably the timing was kind of off. Did it run a long time or?
No, it actually didn't. It closed in November and we opened in August. So it was a very quick run. It was right at the season where the economy hit.
Oh, okay.
October.
But now, was also a Wild Horn?
No. Wild Horn didn't have anything to do with that. It was written by a woman named Jill Santoriello.
Uh-huh.
And she's amazing to take on such a huge event like the French Revolution and The Tale of Two Cities and Dickens, The Tale of Two Cities. And she did a marvelous job. That I was part of that project for a very long time in the beginning stages when, you know, we would do readings and readings and reading after reading after reading. And then, of course, then you do all the investment readings, you know, where you try to get people to give you money. And I recorded the symphonic version of it. And then finally did the Out of Town, and then finally we opened it on Broadway. So it was a long time coming.
Yeah.
It was a huge part of my life, and it was, I have to say that it was an amazing role to play Madame Defarge in such a historic novel as A Tale of Two Cities. And what was lovely about it was that, you know, no one's really ever done that. You know, and I mean, you've seen the movies, as many movies been done of that show, and but you know, Madame never got to sing in the musical, and when she sang, you know, it was pretty intense. If you can imagine, it was all like all her inner words, her subtext coming out, and it was pretty scary.
Mm.
So I love it when you're.
Is that where the song, is that the song, Out of Sight,
yes.
Out of Mind is from there?
Yes, Out of Sight, Out of Mind.
Okay, so why don't we let my audience hear you singing that one?
Okay.
Way cool.
And off to war she goes.
Yeah. Wow. That must have been fun for you.
It was fun, and it was also very thrilling as far as playing a role with that has such depth to her character, you know. To actually play someone that has so much, what am I trying to say? She's cut, I'm totally at a loss for words, but, you know, she's resentful and she's angry, and mm-hmm. she's got all of this pent up inside of her for all of these years, and you don't really know why until part of the show where it actually gets revealed, and then it's like, oh, and the audience goes, well, no wonder. You know, in all of
yeah.
the film, in all the film versions, you know, it goes by very quick, so you don't really realize that. Oh, well, that's why. I mean, they killed her family. Of course, she's gonna, you know, have all of this animosity and all of this pent up rage for so many years until it was
yeah.
her time to really come up and then, you know, show her stuff. And then at the same time, I mean, to play a character that actually. Has built her revenge on so much anger, carried it for so many years, and then wants to kill a child. That's crazy talk, you know?
Yeah.
But I understood
yeah.
her. I understood her. Her anger was to the point where, you know, you wonder why someone stabbed somebody 100 times in their angry, jealous rage, whatever it is. You know, you lose your mind for a minute. And I think that she kind of has been losing her mind little by little by little by little until the end. And
yeah.
then and eventually it turns out it's her own demise, you know, and then she gets killed at the end. You know, it just, it comes around full circle.
Well, I mean, have they, like, thought about, like, taking it on the road or, you know, doing it in any place else?
I hope so. I know that there's some schools that are doing it now, so I don't really know what the producers are thinking of doing. It's been since 2008, so it takes a lot to start a tour together and the investments and the bookings and all that stuff. I don't really get involved with all that stuff.
Right.
Because that's just too much for my brain to handle. just give me the song and I'll sing it and tell me what it'll be.
Let me ask you a question. Like, in terms of having done enough Broadway,
mm-hmm.
you have any, like, funny incidents that ever happened to you or on the stage? That,
oh, my God, I have a ton. Which show?
Pick a show. I love to hear this kind of stuff.
Okay. What I would say one of the funniest things that happened to me on the stage is a long time ago in Les Miserables, where I don't know if you remember, in the second act, everybody is behind this scrim, okay? And the fog machines are going and the music is going and everybody is running with very dim light in a very slow motion. For, you know, quite a few measures. And then at one point, you kind of unfreeze that slow motion and everybody runs to the front of the stage. Well, the scrim did not come up in time, and the whole company did not see the scrim did not go up because of all the fog and all the smoke in their eyes, that it was actually like a cartoon. It's like if you would see 35 cast members just bump into the screen and fall to the ground. It was the funniest moment ever. And then, of course, I had the next line. I could not keep it together. We all fell to the ground. We were like, it was like we were all the Keystone Cops, you know, just falling to the ground. And of course, I had the next line, and I could barely get it out.
And I guess the audience figured out it wasn't supposed to, but there wasn't part of the script.
Well, I don't know what the audience thought, but, you know, at that point, the audience is weeping, you know, so
uh-huh.
who knows what they were thinking. But I don't think, you know, there's so many things that happen on stage, and the audience doesn't ever know. You know, you know, what's so great about being a professional is that, you know, if something does go wrong, you have to on the spot figure it out. Unless, of
yeah.
course, it's a major technical difficulty and glitch that they got to stop the show. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, they don't stop the show. You just keep going.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No,
you know?
I know that.
So that's probably one of my funniest things that's ever happened to me. And then, of course, laughing. Eponine does not laugh. So, but I was human. I can't help it.
that must have been talked about for a while then, huh?
Well, it was, and, you know, when you do a show for so long, you know, a lot of things happen, whereas the turntable a couple of times never stopped turning. So you're trying to do the scene, but yet the furniture, you got to jump over the furniture to stay center. So that was pretty funny. Like, things like that, you know, all the time.
it breaks up the monotony of
it
doing
sure does.
It. Every...
It sure does.
There's so many performances.
And one of my funniest notes I have gotten from a director or a musical director is actually it was Les Mis again. He was so kind. I saw this note taped up to my dressing room one day. I was coming back to do the show, and pretty much it said, "Dear Natalie, could you die a little sooner? You're killing the woodwinds." Which I kept that note. I put it in a frame because I think that was priceless. "Could you die a little sooner? You're killing the woodwinds."
did they have to hold the note for long?
They had
long?
To hold, that... yeah. Because, of course, I'm doing this big dramatic death, and they're, like, running out of breath.
yes. It's a little difficult when you with the oboe.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I played that for 3 years, and I remember, well, okay, you know, that's a hard one.
That's very funny.
That's pretty good. let me ask you about this one, Someone Like You. What's behind that one?
Someone Like You is a Frank Wildhorn tune that from Jekyll and Hyde, and I've always loved it. Pretty much the album is based on tunes that I've always wanted to sing, but I wanted to sing them a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to just get, you know, the karaoke version or just a typical version. Like, you've never heard Something's Coming from West Side Story. That's the first cut on the album, which basically I did it in three-part harmony like the Andrew Sisters. So
wow.
It's very 40 style jazzy, ba 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 ba, like that stuff. And it's as if the Andrew Sisters were singing it, but you just got one person, Nellie Toro, singing it. So it's very, very cool, and I actually performed that number with two of my girlfriends at a show, and it's very difficult. David Loud actually was, he arranged it, and it is probably one of the most difficult ones on the album just because I had to learn all these harmonies, just me, myself, and I, you know, and then try to match myself so it did sound like one voice, you know. So I wanted to do tunes that I've always wanted to sing. Like number 3 on the album is called Where Is It Written? And that's from Yentl. And literally, you know, who would have the balls to redo Barbra Streisand? Nellie Toro.
Yeah.
you know, because I've always loved that song to the point of I've always wanted to sing it. And not that I was trying to compete with Barbra at all. It's just that I always heard it in my head in this the way that we arranged it. And what was so lovely about it, again, the beginning of the song is this prayer like that Barbra does in the show. And she's actually praying to her father in God. And so I made that prayer like they were like... like if we were in a Zen monastery and all these monks came out, you know, like a Gregorian chant, you know. So all of these beautiful male voices come out as if they were like the angels doing this prayer. Yeah. So I had all these incredible ideas for these arrangements. I just had to find the arrangers that would actually agree with me and make it happen. And Andy Einhorn did Where Is It Written? And it was brilliant. When I heard it and when we started recording it, I practically couldn't record it because I was crying the whole time. Because when you know you've heard something in your head for so long and then it's actually coming to fruition, it's actually being recorded permanently for all time, And it came out great. I'm really proud of it, really proud of it. And someone like you is like that. Same thing, you know, the arrangement is just a little different than the way it's done in the show, and I've always wanted to sing it. And so my friend Ethan Pop did that one. And what's so wonderful, I think, about the album, what I'm so proud of, is that, you know, usually a lot of Broadway albums, you have one arranger on the whole album for 10 songs.
Yeah.
And what I liked about trying to get, you know, different people is because then it makes it really eclectic and different. And just the feeling is different. And another 100 people is the way I've always heard it, very street New York. You know, you got the sounds, the buses, the trains going by. You have all those lovely sounds with street people talking. And, you know, that's the way I heard it. So it's very updated, very now, very modern. So that's what I pretty much did with all of them. And then, of course, the last one, the bonus track, which is the duet I did with my beautiful friend Sutton Foster. I'm sure you know who she is.
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, I've always wanted to sing that Judy Garland, Barbra Streisand duet, the Get Happy, Happy Days. And so what we did was we did it together. We recorded together, and she was amazing. She was doing double duty. She was actually performing in Young Frankenstein at night and during the day rehearsing for Shrek. And she still found time to come into the studio and record that song with me. And I love it. It's just, it's happy, it's great. She sounds amazing. So,
well,
yeah.
I'd like everybody now to hear Someone Like You.
Beautiful.
I peer through windows, watch life go by. Dream of tomorrow and wonder why. The past is holding me, keeping life at bay. I wander lost in yesterday, wanting to fly, but scared to try. But is someone like you found like me, then suddenly nothing would ever be the same. My heart would take wing, and I'd feel so alive if someone like you found me. Thank you.
such a great song.
Isn't that great? Just a little different.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you, have you seen any of the new shows on Broadway?
Yes, I actually went to opening night of Sister Act.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really, really fun to go to. It's a fun night at the theater. Yeah, and the nuns are amazing. The nuns
are
funny.
That's right. So what? I couldn't.
Yes.
I just wrote the review, and what I said is it's like when you have a show where, like, at the, you know, when they take your bows and the first person who comes out, there's still a standing ovation just
right.
for the first person. That's right. I mean, I just thought, I mean, I'm humming the music and stuff like that. It's nice
that's
to
great.
Hear. It's like the great part of course, a musical is whether you're going to, when you walk out, do you, like, have the tunes in your head?
Right.
Or a bit, you know.
Right,
and,
right.
And it's just, but, I smelled a bunch of Tonys for that.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
yeah. I haven't had a chance to see much because I've been performing at
mm-hmm.
night as well with, at Queens, and I just got back 3 weeks ago, so
yeah.
I was just lucky that I had that evening off, and my girlfriend invited me to opening night,
yeah,
so that was fun.
Yeah. Oh, the whole world must have been there.
Oh, yeah. I saw quite a few celebrities. I bought Patti LaBelle a drink at the bar at intermission.
And she didn't
great.
Even want one.
Oh, no, she actually did, and the light, they were flickering the lights, and you know, and the bartender wasn't paying attention to her, and he was getting my drink, so that was the chance where I said, "Hey, Patty, what do you want to drink?" She says, "A Chardonnay, honey." So I bought her a drink. She was very excited. So
now you're putting your show and...
My show is called The Broken Road,
mm-hmm.
Baggage Limit 50 Pounds. And it's quite funny and interesting. So if you kind of see that title somewhere, come on down. We're not quite sure where we're going to do it, how we're going to do it. But like I said, I'm just settling in now and unpacking. So once I get all that together, I'll be able to figure it out.
And in that show, are you going to be singing like the... the songs, like, from this album, or you got other stuff?
No, it's other stuff. It's other stuff. Actually, my first show was more towards geared towards the album, but this is more like a theatrical event. It's going to be fun. I'm very excited about it. Broadway World gave it an amazing review. It was like my mother wrote it. It was amazing.
Ah.
I had no idea that they were in the audience, and all of a sudden there was this amazing review. It's like, wow. So it gives me, you know, great joy to be able to do something like that, and people are actually really, really liking it. So,
oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Very excited. And if anybody wants a CD, they can go on cdbaby.com, or they can download, songs individually on iTunes or the whole album, however they want to do it.
What are they going on? CD?
cdbaby.com.
Okay.
Or they can go on to iTunes and, of course, download the whole album there or songs individually.
Can you get the same with if you go to natalietoro.com?
Well, you can go through natalietoro.com, and there's a link to CD
Links?
Baby.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh,
you
okay.
can do it either way. It'll still get you to
okay.
the same place.
Oh, I guess you'll have to get me that one, and we can... we'll have you on the air, and we'll play some songs from that one and
great.
And talk about that, too. You know?
Beautiful. I'm excited.
Yeah, no problem.
Wow.
It'll be great. I like Broadway tunes anyway.
Yeah.
I'm partial to that.
I think I'm going to record soon. Doing the Queen's Theater and all those kind of concerts, people really want me to record Memory. Really and truly. And they're like, it's the best I've ever heard anyone singing.
Oh, yes. So, that's I thought it would be on the album. That was really, mm-hmm. yes.
Well, the reason
really
it's not
great.
On the album is because I do it so much in concert. You know, it's
okay.
You know what I'm saying. So, but I think my next, besides my one woman show, the next project will also be putting together a CD collection of all the roles I've done, everything that people are keep coming up to me and saying, please record that, please record that. So I think I'll put that together maybe this summer and have that out soon.
Yeah. By the way, was that the first time you've been to Queen's Theater in the Park to perform?
No, actually, it's my third.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's my third. Last time I was there, I think, was 3 years ago.
And I mean, did you have your own show? What did you do at that time?
No, I was doing Neil Berg's thing.
Oh, with a Neil Berg. Oh, you know,
the Neil Berg show. Yeah.
You know, that's funny. Then if you did that like 3 years ago, I probably saw the show.
Oh, funny. Well, you know, like I said, he rotates so much that you could have come and, you know, I could have been there the second week or, you know. Maybe you missed it, but he rotates, and of course I was just on the road for almost 2 years, so I haven't done anything with Neil for more than 2 years now. So
okay. So do you like the venue?
Venue's great, and more importantly is the people that work there are the nicest people I've ever come across. The stage managers, the house managers, and everybody that runs that theater. I don't know. It's like they're on another planet because everyone is the sweet level and the kindness level is way beyond.
Isn't it?
It's gorgeous.
Did you meet Jeffrey?
Okay. Jeffrey, the stage manager?
Well, actually Jeffrey who runs the whole thing, who retired.
Oh, I don't think I've met him.
But you must, unless you met him.
I might have met him years ago.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about all the people that work there, including the parking valet people, and they love what they do, and it really shows, and it makes our life a little bit easier just to know you want to come to work, and it's a beautiful scene, you know.
Yeah,
it's nice.
You know the original, you know what it originally was, or you know the
no,
building.
I don't.
It actually goes back. It's from the 1964 World's Fair.
The original building that the Queen's Theater, isn't that new? Was built into that little round thing.
Well, that's what it originally looked like. I mean, there was a lot of stuff done to it since.
Right, right.
But originally, that's what it basically looked like.
That's interesting.
At the World's Fair. As a matter of fact, like if you see outside, if you see this thing up there, which is there's like these towers kind of thing.
Yeah, the towers are like from Men in Black.
Yeah,
the movie
that's
Men
what
in
people
Black.
Say from, that was actually the New York State Pavilion at the 64 World's Fair.
Wow, that's amazing.
And there's only one other thing left over, which is now they call the Queen's Museum, which is like you can just like walk over there from the theater. And that museum actually that was originally from the 1939 World's Fair. That's how old that building is. And after the World's Fair was over, after some time went by, it was the first United Nations building.
Unbelievable. In the middle of the park.
In the middle of the park.
Wow.
And that was while they were building the United Nations. That's where they had the...
Wow, it's a little bit of history.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful park. It really is.
Yes, isn't it? It's
gorgeous.
It's really great, yeah. But anyway, so I appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
Thank you.
I don't know
so
what
much.
Happened. I have somebody is scheduled for 6:30 and never called.
Oh my goodness,
so.
They're waiting and they're like, "Will you please?"
No, he's
shut
not
up,
waiting.
Natalie.
No, he's not waiting. That's the whole thing because I could see. I have a switchboard, so I could see if somebody is on or not. And I don't know what happened, but he hasn't. He hasn't called in.
Oh,
and
Lord.
So, well, I don't know. I'll play I'll play a couple of songs.
Okay.
You know, that's how I do it. And then if not, and I just say, you know, end the show. The last time this happened, I'm going, okay, let's see. I mean, it's very different for me. Now, my background is show business.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, well, it's really difficult. I mean, like, I could do 3 scenes from The Wizard of Oz on the air, but it's not as funny when you do
with
it on the radio.
You?
It just doesn't work, you know. You have to
yeah.
see it. I mean, I could do Jerry Lewis. Misses something.
That's funny.
When you can't see my face looking like I'm
right.
Jerry Lewis, you know?
Right, of course.
So it's like, okay. But what I need to do is I have to start getting a list of jokes, that's all. And,
right.
And tell some jokes.
That's
but,
okay. Yeah. You have your listeners. They'll listen to whatever you say.
Yeah. So yes, until whenever the CD is available, then send it off to me, and we'll
wonderful,
and we'll get that on the air too.
Excellent.
Okay?
Well, if you have any more time, play some more.
Oh yeah.
Why not?
Well, I will. Oh sure, of course.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Sure, and thank you for being on and. We'll talk to you again.
We'll talk soon. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yes. So that was Natalie Toro. And if you go to, www.natalietoro.com. Unfortunately, I only uploaded 3 songs on there. So let's see who I have here. My favorite. I mean, you know, I have to. Okay, of some of my favorites, and one of which is this one.
She may be the face I can't forget, the trace of pleasure or regret, maybe my treasure. For the price I have to pay, she may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day. She may be the beauty or the beast, maybe the famine or the smile reflected in a stream. She may not be what she may seem inside her shell. Life is she.
just love that song. That's because I love the movie Notting Hill. I wish it was on again. I could just see that over and over. It just kind of calms me down. Well, I'd like to, let's see if I'm going to see if I could pull up here. Okay. As I say, I did a review of Sister Act, and the title I gave was Sister Act, Gay Gesunde Hay. Sister Act is on Broadway, and we've been blessed with the best. When standing ovations commence as the ensemble takes their bows, you know that a Broadway show deserves a ton of Tonys. Unfortunately, there isn't a Tony that is slated for a co-producer, in this case, Whoopi Goldberg, who starred in the movie versions. The locale is Philadelphia, where nightclub singer Dolores Van Cartier, Patina Miller, is auditioning for her headline act in front of her boyfriend Curtis Jackson, played by Kingsley Leggs, who owns a nightclub. This will be the first of hearing what would be the song that will have you humming, Take Me to Heaven. Yes. Curtis is involved with much crime, and upon hearing that one of his cohorts has snitched, murders one, as Dolores happens to witness. She is off to the police for safety as Curtis decides he now needs to kill her. He will send his sidekicks, Joey, played by John Tracy Egan, Pablo, played by Cesar Samayoa, who also speaks in Spanish, and TJ, Demon Green, Curtis's awkward young relative. Meanwhile, Dolores encounters Eddie Souther, played by Chester Gregory, one of the officers, who she remembers from high school having a crush on her and nicknaming him Sweaty Eddie. The cops need Dolores as a witness, and to hide her before trial, they decide on the Queen of Angels Cathedral, where Mother Superior decides to make her fit in by posing as a nun and giving her the task of teaching an extremely poor singing choir, as well as renaming her Sister Mary Clarence. Now, you have to have the token gay men stint thrown in, at least here in New York City. Monsignor O'Hara, played by Fred Applegate, and Mother Superior, played by Victoria Clark, are discussing the church shutting down due to lack of funds and small congregation. Mother asks who will buy the church, and he says, two bachelors who deal in antiques. Just last week I saw them eye the chapel, say the word Gothic three times, and then cling to one another for support. They will be referred to and more. As for Sister Mary Clarence, she will help the choir with a much more modern style of singing hymns, complete with rhythm and nightclub habits. Where the movie version gave us songs that were revised, it is original music by Alan Menken and Glenn Slater. That's the next topic. Great score. Miller, who had starred in the London production, will have enough occasions to display her magnificent talent with songs such as Fabulous Baby, Raise Your Voice, Sunday Morning Fever, Sister Act, and Take Me to Heaven. Most of the numbers that she sings are with the nuns. Clark, who had starred in Light in the Piazza, shines with Here Within These Walls and Haven't Got a Prayer. Gregory has I Could Be That Guy, while Legs gets to do his Barry White voice with When I Find My Baby. Marla Mindell, who portrays Sister Mary Robert, delivers The Life I Never Led. Sunday Morning Fever, the reprise of Sister Act, the reprise of Take Me to Heaven, the reprise of Fabulous Baby as Dolores' dream, where the gay boys come into play, and Spread the Love Around are the great production numbers to which we have to thank choreographer Anthony Van Last and all for director Jerry Zaks, as you don't have to be Christian to enjoy the humor. Hey, they even have Sister Mary Lazarus, played by Audrey Neenan, splurting a few Yiddish expressions. See it at the Broadway Theater. Oh, yes. And I urge everyone, I mean, it's the show to see. Well, since Bob hasn't called in, I'm going to end the show instead of just gabbing about just the, you know, for time. And I'm off to Indianapolis. I'm not sure. I may do a show there. And if not, I will do one when I return. There's a lot to do in Indy beside the 500. So until next time, everybody, have a good day, evening, or whatever it is on your time. Yeah.